folks, and welcome. This is Pastor Butch Paul sitting in from Elder Seastrom today, if you don't mind for a little while. It is Friday the 20th, believe it or not, of September 2019. Welcome to today's broadcast, Financial Survival. And folks, and again, Melody's number, as you know, is 800-375-4188. Now, I'm not Melody. I can't do what she does, but Melody is a little bit swamped today, and I think, actually, don't tell her I said this, I think she deserves a day off once in a while. I'll be on for the first 20 minutes, and then the last 40 minutes will be with Melody, with James Corbin. James Corbett, and I'm sure you'll be really tickled with all the information they're going to have to share for 40 minutes of the last two segments. But I'll be with you for a little while, if you don't mind, for 20 minutes, and do the best I can to bring news and updates and whatever I can to maybe help you understand a few things. Not that I'm any smarter than anybody else out there, believe me. But that's what I do. That's what we do here on Melody's program, try to educate people, help make good decisions. Let's get to the markets. I tell you, gold had a good day today. Gold was up $12.38 to $15.1644. Good for gold. Silver's up $5, $17.95. Platinum was up $3.10 at $9.4617. Palladium up $7, $16.4648. Oil was down $58.09 a little bit. The Dow was down 100.95 points at 26,993. S&P 500 down 942 at 29,97. S&P 100 down 448, 13,24.18. NASDAQ down 5,260 at 81,30.28. So gold and silver are metals are up, markets are down, and the price of oil is down slightly. So, and you know, it's amazing. I mean, the price of oil did not go up all that much at all. But gasoline here in Nettie, West Virginia, went up 14 cents a gallon. And I'll bet you, no matter what the oil does, if it came down $10 a barrel tomorrow, it would take 2 weeks for the price to come back down on the pumps. Isn't that amazing how that works? I hate to say that it's rigged, but... I think you and I both know it is. I do know. I think you both know it is. And I got Melody said that, you know, for sure, that y'all know this, that the Fed, listen to this. This is amazing. It's how shaky things are, and how they're trying to bolster things up so to stay a little longer. The Fed's going to pump $75 billion a day into the economy through October. $75 billion a day through October. Now let that sink in a minute, folks. That is a huge, huge amount of money. I mean, they must be a little nervous about something, because $75 billion a day for the next 40, 45 days. There's something that they're doing their best, I suppose, to keep everything somewhat normal, to keep from panicking. And again, it's just going to be like backing water up on a dam that's ready to bust. When it does finally go, it's going to be hard, really bad, a bad thing. But $75 billion a day been pumped into it to keep everything going, I guess you say, somewhat normal. And if that wasn't, in my mind, alarming enough, I think this will make us think a little bit about what's happening, could happen with Iran any day. Trump unveils highest sanctions ever imposed on a country. Let that sink in a second. The highest sanction ever imposed on a country. You know, in 500 years of the history of Iran, they never attacked anybody. That's true. Check it out. I do not believe that they attacked Saudi's oil fields, but that's my opinion. Likely effort to satisfy the hawks and keep up maximum pressure on Iran in the wake of its alleged attacks on Saudi Aramco facilities by Saudi and U.S. accounts, President Trump on Friday has announced the highest sanctions ever imposed on the country. This is a long-awaited response coordinated with the Saudis, according to the press briefing in the aftermath of last week's devastating aerial attacks on the kingdom. Y'all got a comment, too, on this. If it's so devastating, how can it get back up and running in a few days? Maybe that's a silly question, but I just wonder. I don't know. Addressing reporters in the Oval Office, the president outlined new sanctions targeting the Iranian National Bank, which he described as going right to the top. "We've never done it to this level. It's too bad what's happening with Iran. It's going to hell," President Trump added. "They're practically broke. They are broke. And they could solve the problem very easily. All they have to do is stop with the terror," the president said further, alluding to Iran's downward spiraling economy after a year of biting U.S. sanctions. I don't know what y'all think about that. I don't know. But I do know that it's going to be tough on this country. And sanctions have always been a quiet declaration of war. To sanction a country and its people from the necessary things to survive every day, to choke off their supply line, is an act of war. We'll see what happens. I don't know. It is a bit scary. Now I'm going to share with you an article about $21 trillion. $21 trillion is missing from the U.S. government. That's $65,000 per person, as much as the national debt. This is Article 1, Section 9, Clause 7, U.S. Constitution. No money shall be drawn from the Treasury, but in consequence of appropriation made by law, and a regular statement and account of receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. Well, obviously that's not happening in this country. Here's the article says, what's going on? Where's the money? How could this happen? How much has really gone missing? What would happen if a corporation failed to pass an audit like this, or a taxpayer? This means the Fed and their member banks are transacting government money outside the law. So are the corporate contractors that run the payment system. So are the Wall Street firms who are selling government securities without full disclosure. Would your banks continue to handle your bank account if you behaved like this? Would your investors continue to buy your securities if you behaved like this? Would your accountant be silent? This is the reason that there is such a strong push to change or tear up the U.S. Constitution. This is why members of the establishment say it's old and outdated. This is why there is such a push for gun control. Don't buy it. We can use the Constitution to get our money and our government back. It is time to enforce the U.S. Constitution. And folks, I'll make a comment on that. Even our founders knew that the Constitution would not stand without morality. They said it's impossible to govern any people that is not a moral people. So the Constitution is not going to save us. It's not. It's not. Until we repent and come back to what we're supposed to be, it can't happen. It says the Salieri Report has been covering the missing money since 2000, when Catherine Austin Fitch began to warn Americans and global investors about mortgage fraud at the U.S. Department of Housing and Development, the engineering of the housing bubble that led to trillions more dollars in bailouts and funds missing from U.S. government starting back in fiscal 1998. Are you hearing this? $21 trillion defrauded from the American people. Totally unlawful. Totally, illegal, if I guess put that way, but it's unlawful because it is going against the law of the Constitution. And again, $68,000 per person that we owe in this, as much as we owe in the national debt, has been taken out with no account. That's huge. I wonder who knows and really who cares. I wonder, seriously, what could be done about it? What would be the next step? You tell me. Now, I guess you all heard, of course, about Trump and his so-called phone call with a foreign official and promises he made. Well, one thing to say about Trump, poor Trump is picked on a lot. Whether it's really justified or not, I don't think so compared to what other presidents have done. But anyway, Trump whistleblower saga threatens to blow up 2020 campaign. Two reports on Thursday night said conversation in the complaint involved Ukraine, a country that the president's close story has turned to looking in for dirt on Joe Biden. An explosive whistleblower complaint that is threatening to paralyze much of Washington, D.C., and that now may upend the 2020 presidential campaign. Let's repeat that now. An explosive whistleblower complaint that is threatening to paralyze much of Washington, D.C., now may upend the 2020 presidential campaign. I swear to kind of doubt that. But anyway, 2 hours on Thursday night reported the complaint in question involves President Trump and matters related to Ukraine. Those outlets, the Washington Post and New York Times, did not go much further than those details. But earlier reports said that what happened, what prompted a whistleblower to come forward was a pledge made by Trump to a foreign leader. You know, and Trump made a very good point about this. Why would he on a phone that he knows is being tapped, listen to? Why would he make statements that could get his administration in trouble? I think it's a fair question, don't you? I mean, he said himself, and he's right, why would he do that? It didn't make any sense to me that anyone who knows their phone is being tapped by anybody would say anything that would incriminate them or harm anything to do with what they do for a living, so to speak. Think about that. I don't know if Americans just don't think at all anymore or not. I don't know if they don't think beyond the talking heads on TV. I don't know if they ever sit down and think things through for themselves. I don't know. But I think the art of thinking is dying in this country very quickly, along with the gift of common sense. American struggles with medical bills are a foreign concept in other countries. This is the Netherlands. In France, a visit to the doctor typically costs the equivalent of $1.12. A night in German hospital cost a patient roughly $11. And in the Netherlands, one of the few wealthy nations other than the U.S. where patients face a deductible, insurance must cover all medical care after the first 385 years, roughly $431. Healthcare in the U.S. has long been unique, but few things are so starkly set in the American system apart on how much patients pay out of pocket for medical care, even if they have insurance. Now, I will make a comment here, and I will make this as clear as I possibly can. These other nations have socialist medical systems. And for years, other nations, including Canada, have come into the U.S. to have surgery done that would take them longer than they could live waiting for it in their countries, whether it be Canada or anywhere else. They come to America to have surgery because they can get it done now. They don't have to wait 3 or 4 or 5 years. Socialist medicine sounds good on the cover, but underneath it stinks. It smells good, looks good, but it stinks under. Socialized medicine takes away the quality of care, the speed of care, for the sake of it doesn't cost you very much. Oh, people, why can't we ever learn? Why can't we ever learn that nothing from the government is free? Nothing they ever do can ever be considered something that's really going to benefit us in the long run. Why can't we grasp the idea that whoever feeds you and clothes you and houses you is your boss, your lord, if you will? That's why they call it landlord. Why do we have such a hard time accepting the fact that we have to give account to those who take care of us? And if they're ranks are backed up where they can't really get to us in time, hey, who are we to complain? We've been taken care of. Why should we complain? Why should they even care? They're backlogged already and they got plenty of people waiting in line. Why do you have to care about you? You need to think about this thing before we go to think about voting somebody that's going to promise us anything out of the public till. Nothing is free. Nothing is free. Everything costs something. Think about that. According to Health and Human Services, the number of unaccompanied alien children entering the U.S. reaches highest in history. Now, every time I talk about this, I feel heartless, and I don't mean to be. But every time we have an illegal come across the border, especially someone who's underage, that can't work even if they wanted to, really, it drains the assets of this country, which are falling quickly. And we have liberal, and I hate to use that word, but that's what I know we're going to think of, leftist, socialist states, counties, and cities that open their borders up as refugee centers, if you will, places where they have amnesty. Those states like California are going under. Their streets are sewers. Their population is shrinking, especially wealthy people that want to keep on paying the high taxes. California is a cesspool in more ways than one. It says the number of unaccompanied children, that's UACs, entering the United States during fiscal year 2019 has grown to levels never seen before. Jonathan Hayes, director of the HHS Office of Refugee Resettlement, told Congress on Thursday. According to his written testimony, before the House Energy and Commerce Committee, DHS referred more than 67,000 unaccompanied alien children to ORR as of September 16, 2019, which is the highest number in the program's history. Almost 70,000 unaccompanied children in America. Who foots the bill? Where did it go? Who takes care of them? Look in the mirror, folks. You foot the bill. And in a sense, you're taking care of them. When you're having a hard time, a lot of us, just to take care of your own family, they're draining your coffers to take care of children that you don't even know. And that's not because you don't care, but it's outside of our reach to do all these things out of our pockets. It just truly is. So I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but I hope it does. Hope makes you understand that we are living in a time when everyone thinks they're entitled. Everyone thinks just because they're born here, they're entitled. I mean, we have people come in here, Chinese especially, come over here just to have their children born here. Because of right of birth, they become a U.S. citizen. Because they're born here. Now, whether that's right or wrong or constitutional or not, that is something that's draining, again, our coffers and dividing our country. This nation was once, although it wasn't always one race of people, didn't have to be. At least we had one common goal as a nation. I don't care whether you're black or white, Italian, Hispanic, I don't care who you were. America at one time had a common bond in society that made us Americans. We were not black Americans, African Americans, Italian Americans, Hispanic Americans. We were Americans, period. When we put the uniform on, when I was in the military in the Air Force for 3.5 years, I noticed that the uniform didn't mind what color it was on. It'd be on a black face, a white face, to make any difference, yellow face. We were all Americans. And we, in most cases, acted like we're all on the same team. But in the last 40 years since I've come home, that's over 40 years since I've been home, I got out in 71, I watched this country be divided. Everyone claiming their own unique qualities that makes them who they are, and they don't want to homogenize into a society. Now, hey, there's nothing wrong with being an Italian lineage and thankful that you are. It's just we've got to organize together. Folks, we're flat out of time. The next 40 minutes will be Melody Seastrom and James Corbett. I'll see you next week, Lord willing. Have a wonderful weekend. And call Melody at 800-375-4188. God bless. Bye-bye.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I am pleased to welcome back to the program James Corbett. And as you may know, James is the founder and editor of the Corbett Report, which was founded in 2007, and in 2012, he became the editorial writer for the International Forecaster that was created by our good friend Bob Chapman. And, of course, you can visit James' website at thecorbettreport.com, thecorbettreport.com, and also you can request a complimentary issue to the International Forecaster by going to their website, theinternationalforecaster.com. Well, hello, James.
Hello, Melody. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fantastic. Thank you for asking. And I just want to remind the listeners that our conversation is pre-recorded earlier in the week, Wednesday evening to be exact. So perhaps things have changed by the time this program is being aired on Friday, but I want to start our conversation pretty much with one word: Iran. I think it's a little, and you know, me being a female, I can't stop, right? I got to keep going. So maybe I can't start the program with one word. But of course, you know about the attack on Aramco, false flag, Israel, IPO.
Well, here's the strange thing. There has been someone claiming responsibility for this attack, but that is being ignored by the U.S. and Saudi Arabia in their desperate attempt to flail all over themselves to blame it on Iran. So this was the interesting aporia, to use a literary term, in the story that was pointed out by Japanese Defense Minister Taro Kono, which did make some international headlines in the past day or two, where apparently on Wednesday he was saying that we are not aware of any information that points to Iran with regards to the attack. And he said, quote, "We believe the Houthis carried out the attack based on the statement claiming responsibility." I mean, this doesn't seem like a gigantic puzzle to be solved. There is a group claiming responsibility. And sure, I'm sure in the wake of any major thing you have to vet, I mean, there will be people who take responsibility who aren't responsible. But at the very least, maybe you might want to start your investigation there, whereas it seems Saudi Arabia and Washington have already pre-concluded that it's Iran. And as, of course, Trump tweeted out, they are locked and loaded, ready to retaliate for this strike, just waiting Saudi Arabia's final word that it was indeed Iran, which, I mean, that's just a stunning, stunning statement. Specifically, let me not misquote. Trump tweeted, "There is reason to believe that we know the culprit, are locked and loaded depending on verification, but are waiting to hear from the kingdom as to who they believe was the cause of this attack and under what terms we would proceed." Which is a stunning thing for the President of the United States to be saying, essentially saying, "We are completely at your mercy, Riyadh. Whatever you say, whoever you say to go after, in whatever way you say to go after them, we are locked and loaded and ready to go." That's make Saudi Arabia great again, I guess.
Well, that was my question. Was the kingdom dictating the United States foreign policy? And I guess to some degree we are hitched to them by the hip because of the petrodollar. Or has that relationship been broken? I mean, lately all you hear about is how the United States is now energy independent. So are we trying to replace them with oil? Maybe peak oil is real? Or is this just, I mean, Pompeo was over there Tuesday, you know, calling it an act of war on Saudi Arabia. So
Yes. Well, very worrying development, and it does show certainly the Trump regime's close ties with Saudi Arabia, which we've seen. I've been following the Saudi-U.S. relationship over the last several years because, as you say, I think the Saudi-U.S. relationship is one important part of the backbone of the global economy through the petrodollar system that's been in place since the 1970s. And that has been the lens through which I've seen some of the developments in recent years, including, of course, the dangling of the 28 pages of 9/11 and other such things, sort of as a sort of Damocles over the head of the Saudi royal family, saying, you know, we can at any time basically blame you guys for 9/11 and come after you. And there is clearly a shadow game being played out about oil and who's the biggest oil importer these days. It isn't the U.S. anymore, it's China. And what if we started to go to petro-yuan instead of petro-dollar, and you guys better not do that. So I've been following that back and forth for some time, but really since Trump came in, it's been all 100% pro-Saudi 100% of the time, of course, based on the record-breaking, gigantic deal that they signed, well, Kushner signed, essentially, with the Saudi regime back a couple of years ago for, I can't even remember, however many zeros after the $100 billion or whatever it was touted as at the time. I think that was an inflated number, but still, clearly, some big numbers being thrown around by the Saudis to make sure that their bread is still buttered on the American side. And in return, as always with part of this deal, is that the Americans are there at the ready, locked and loaded, ready to do what Saudi Arabia says. It certainly helps that Saudi Arabia's enemy is also the Trump regime's perceived enemy, which is Iran. And so they definitely have a common interest there. And that is, unfortunately, I mean, that's a very worrying thing, because, of course, Iran has always had their head on the chopping block. After Iraq, after Syria, it was always going to be Iran somewhere down that on that line. And is it their turn? Is it the turn to try to go into Iran? I certainly hope not. I don't want to see that for every possible reason. I mean, not only because of all the deaths that will happen in Iran and all the deaths that will happen of American and Saudi forces. Sure, I care about those human beings as well. But also just the greater world situation. I think trying to invade Iran is truly the most chaos-inducing thing that could happen in the world right now, and I certainly hope that they're not ready to do so.
But you know what? What frightens me is knowing personalities and knowing, seeing the, I don't know, the structure of everything, and how everything else. It's just, I don't want to see it either. But it almost, unless something else can outweigh that, there's a bigger problem on the horizon that might, you know, put this in the background for now. But and we're going to talk about that here in a little bit. I have one more question for you, though. Earlier this week, I read, and I just discussed it briefly on the program, that a trade deal was struck between Japan and the United States, and very little is known of the contents. Well, we do know it doesn't include autos. Maybe you can help shed a little more light on the trade deal between our two countries for our listeners.
Unfortunately, I cannot, okay, because I have not been following this story. As your listeners may or may not know, I did a huge documentary project for 9/11 this year as a two-hour documentary. So I've spent a lot of time in the last several weeks on that. I actually didn't follow this latest deal or what it involves at all, but I do see the New York Times reporting on Trump says U.S. and Japan have reached initial trade agreement, and the trade pact, while limited, is expected to increase access for American agricultural products like beef and chicken to the Japanese market. That would provide some relief to farmers who have been hurt by Mr. Trump's trade war with China. And exact details of the deal have not been released, or at least had not been released when the Times was reporting on that earlier this week. I haven't seen any of more details on that, but it does seem that this is one way to try to shore up some of the losses that are going to be felt from the Chinese trade war. I'd be interested to see some of the details of this, actually, because it seems to impinge on some of the very matters that were sticking points in the TPP negotiations. Remember the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations that were taking place during the Obama regime, and that obviously Trump did pull the U.S. out of when he got into office. A lot of that did revolve around, you know, what types of access was going to be gained to what specific sectors of which markets for which country. And there were, of course, always the wrangling over, yeah, but you subsidize this, so we're going to subsidize that, or we won't accept GMO unless, you know, you guys do this, and blah, blah, blah. So I would be interested to see the specifics of this, but it does seem it's more weighted towards the agricultural sector than the automotive.
We are going to get, in the second part of the program, into your interview with Catherine Austin Fitz. And if you wanted to shed any more light on, give the listeners some information about your documentary of 9/11. The whistleblowers, I believe, is a big part of it. So if you'd like to comment on that. But before we get there, this week I've been following this story. I kind of kept it quiet, didn't talk about it until the program today. Then I saw that mainstream media is giving it some interest, I should say, on Wednesday. But it was the week started off pretty turbulent in the overnight funding markets, where the short-term rates spiked to levels as high as 10% Monday and Tuesday. The Fed had to go in there. The Fed was forced to do two open market operations to calm it down in an unusual move, rose to 2.3%. He's also going to go in Thursday morning. He announced a third operation for Thursday morning. There's a Drew Mattis. He's a chief market strategist at MetLife Investment Management, said that things are going to be volatile, but he can't pinpoint what happened, and he's sure no one can. And he's not even sure the Fed knows, because Powell said that he's going to be learning about what happened over the next six weeks. So they really don't have a solution or even know what's happening. And I find this interesting because, I mean, something's going on in the background that does not seem to be good in the financial.
That's a good way of putting it. Does not seem to be good.
Does not seem to be good.
This is a pretty big flashing red alert sign. And perhaps if everything else was ticking along nicely in the economy, this wouldn't be something to be interested in or that important. But it does seem to reflect a lot of other things that are going on. So this is about the repo rates, which the repo market is the short-term loan market that is used mostly by banks and hedge funds for their daily bond trading, their brokerage businesses. It is used, most of their investments are done with borrowed money, and the repo market gives them large access to large sums of credit on a daily basis, kind of overnight loans. And so, you know, all things being equal, it ticks along quite nicely as long as there's enough money, credit out there for them to play with. But for whatever reason, suddenly on Monday, it started spiking up, and interest rates on those overnight loans jumped from 2.2% in early August to 2.88% on Monday, and then on Tuesday, spiked to 6%. So clearly something's off, right? And the question is, well, what is it? And looking again at the New York Times, the old gray prostitute, why not? They say in recent days, a number of factors have drained funds out of the market. Monday was a tax payment deadline for big companies and a holiday in Japan, which I can attest to, which meant a large source of funds was shut off. And after a recent auction of government bonds, people had to divert cash to pay for those. Those were likely the trigger events for this week's surge, but the amount of money pooled in the market has been declining for a while, and that's because of the Fed. Since 2018, the Fed has been shrinking its holdings of bonds and reversing its crisis-era policy of pushing money into the financial system. The change has effectively reduced the supply of money available in the short-term lending markets. The surge in short-term rates suggests that the Fed might have removed a bit too much, making reserves too scarce. And again, I'm not sure how much this is obfuscating the true problem, but at any rate, it does point to one of the problems that we've all seen on the horizon ever since the QE craziness began over a decade ago, which is, how are they going to unwind this? Once you put trillions of dollars on your balance sheets and you start pumping money into the markets, or at least into buying mortgage-backed securities and other toxic assets, how are you going to unwind that and bring things back to a level of normality? And perhaps this repo rate crisis, the spike, is at least one of the early flashing warning signs of, hey, you know, this isn't going to be so easy to unwind.
Well, there is no such thing anymore as reality back to normal.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we'll never get there until afterwards. And you know, Jerome Powell said today, after he did cut our rates by a quarter point, he said, we'll never go to negative interest rates. But yet we've talked about negative interest rates. The world, or a lot of the European nations, are on negative interest rates. Japan is too, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, we've heard this before. In fact, we've heard that negative rates were impossible until central banks started doing it. So I'll believe it when I don't see it, I suppose. But it seems that we're trending in that direction.
But Ron Paul, he warned that negative interest rates is going to crush the global economy. He says the United States isn't going to be an exception. We're going to join the rest of them. And we're in the biggest bond bubble in history. It's going to burst. We say that almost every day. And yet the world just goes on like it's no big deal.
It's the Cassandra curse, because you see what is self-evident reality. It is just mathematical reality. And you warn people about it, but it takes time. And unfortunately, people hear you warning about it and they say, oh, you're just a Chicken Little. It's nothing's happening. Look, everything's fine. Record stock market, et cetera, et cetera. So you're wrong until you're right. And at that point, a lot of people may have turned away because they, you're just being negative. That's the Cassandra curse. We know what is coming. The only thing we do not know is exactly when the bottom falls out.
And it doesn't really matter if the Fed cuts rates. He did today, and look, the repo rates, I read, they shot up to 10%. So, I mean, so is President Trump. I mean, did he know all this was happening, coming to this direction, to where he was putting pressure on Jerome Powell to begin cutting these rates? The two really don't go hand in hand, do they?
I think Trump gets to play it anyway. Anything that happens, he'll just blame on the Fed and say it was the Fed's fault. Anything good that happens, of course, was because of Trump. And that's the way that, obviously, the president gets to play that. Given the soapbox that he has, he can just take credit for everything good and pass the blame on for anything bad. There is some truth to that, in that, in a sense, the Federal Reserve does control the election cycle, because if they do crash the markets ahead of the election, it's pretty much guaranteed that the incumbent will not be given another mandate. So there's something to it, but still, it seems a bit of an easy game to play. Hey, the economy is booming, it's record high, it's because of me. Oh, the economy is falling out, it's plunging, it's because of the Fed.
You know, every day there's reports about recessions, global crisis, world depression, recession. We talk about having social unrest here in the United States. Is that the same around the world?
Yes. I mean, there's clearly something in the air at this point, and I don't think there's. I mean, I'd be hard pressed to think of any major market, at any rate, that isn't in that same mindset at the moment. I think everyone sees handwriting on the wall, and of course that pertains in Japan, where, as we've talked about before, the BOJ now owns a significant portion of the economy, and there's no way to unwind that. It's a general feeling.
All right, well, we hear the music that came in pretty loud. Sorry about that, James. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. Would you tell me again? Tell me again tonight. Each and every
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light Systems today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my guest, James Corbett, the founder and editor of The Corbett Report. Please make sure you visit his website, thecorbettreport.com. And James, for the past couple of weeks, longer than that, you've been working on your documentary of 9/11. Tell the listeners about it, and because it is such a... You don't hear very many people referencing 9/11 much anymore, so I think what you did is very important.
Right. Well, in fact, I've been working on it for several months now, so this is the completion of that, and it did come out on my website over the course of 6 days, 7 days in the lead-up to 9/11, one part of the documentary per day. And essentially, the documentary is a compilation of 9/11 whistleblowers. That's also the name of the documentary. So there you go. It does what it says on the tin. And it's essentially, it's a response to those people who often, when you talk about the problems, the obvious cover-up of 9/11 and the official story, you'll often hear, but somebody would have talked, which is a fallacious argument in a number of respects. One of which that always irks me is that they say, well, look, every major... conspiracy that we know about there's been a whistleblower, there's been people who've come out at some point. Well, that's logically fallacious because you only know about the ones that you know about because there were those whistleblowers. You don't know about the ones you don't know about because there were not people. So anyway, I mean, even disregarding that, the point is there have been people who have come out to talk about their inside knowledge of the cover-up of 9/11. And so I wanted to highlight some of those stories just so to get them not even on the record. They're already on the record, but to hopefully amplify their voices because they have been so thoroughly marginalized. So I look at stories, various different stories. For example, Kevin Ryan, who was working at Environmental Health Laboratories, which at that time was a subsidiary of Underwriters Laboratory, which did underwrite the steel in the World Trade Center and did perform some of the fire performance tests that the National Institute of Standards and Technology was doing to try to determine why the Twin Towers came down, that those tests actually showed that the story that they were trying to put forward at that time, that it was a pancake collapse and the upper floors basically crushed the bottom floors. The upper 10 or so floors crushed the bottom 80 or so floors into dust. That was nonsense and baloney, but there are even Underwriters Laboratory's own tests proved it. When Kevin Ryan saw this and then saw that Underwriters Laboratory was not talking about this, they were not trying to defend their corporate reputation, he was wondering what was going on. He wrote directly to the head of the NIST investigation, and that email that he published was published online. And as a result, he was immediately fired and has become a crusader for 9/11 truth and activism over the years. That's just one example of one person with specific inside technical expertise in a certain area, knew a certain aspect of the 9/11 cover-up. But there are many others. Michael Springman, who worked in the U.S. consulate in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, where 14 of the 19 alleged hijackers got their passports. Or you have people like Barry Jennings, who was an emergency director for the housing department of the New York City. In the Office of Emergency Management in World Trade Center Building 7 on the morning of 9/11, as the events were unfolding, he testifies he got caught up in explosions in the building trying to get his way out of the building, and was eventually pulled out just a few hours before the building, of course, ultimately collapsed, quote-unquote, due to office fires, quote-unquote, as the official explanation has it. He testifies to explosions, but they say there's no evidence of explosions. Well, how about the eyewitness evidence, let alone other types of evidence? There's many stories like that, and that was essentially what I was attempting to detail in that documentary.
It truly is amazing that, I mean, you know, these people are giving so much to try to get the story out, and yet it's such a story that is ignored. And it's
indeed. And one, in fact, one of the stories that really got to me was that it was in the course of creating this documentary and researching it that I came across the story of Kate Jenkins. And I may have come across this before, but I certainly didn't know the details of this story. And I think it's a particularly impactful one because we all, regardless of whatever you believe about 9/11, we all care about the first responders who really were heroes rushing into the scene that day, pulling people out of the pile and saving lives and risking their own lives. And as we now know, dying en masse due to diseases that they got from the dust that they were inhaling, that they were told was safe to breathe. The EPA, of course, headed by Christine Todd Whitman at the time, coming out and saying, don't worry, workers in Lower Manhattan have nothing to worry about. On the pile, they were recommending that responders did wear masks, although they couldn't enforce that. But for Lower Manhattan, the air quality is fine. We now know that was not the case, and we know that they knew that was not the case, and we know that because of Kate Jenkins, who was an EPA scientist working for the EPA since 1979, specifically looking at environmental toxins and hazards, and she had this whole remarkable story in the early 1990s. She went through this whole ordeal with the EPA where she was trying to blow the whistle on some Monsanto-sponsored studies that found that Monsanto-created dioxin, a.k.a. Agent Orange, was not the cause of cancer of all of these workers at the Monsanto plant in the early 1980s. And she went through this whole ordeal trying to blow the whistle on that. And not only did the EPA clear Monsanto and all of that, they also pursued Jenkins and tried to get her fired. She was eventually reinstated to her job by the Department of Labor that had to step in and adjudicate that. So she already had her experience blowing the whistle in the EPA. Come 9/11, and she saw the reports that were going out, the type of science that the EPA was using to make their determination that there was no major cleanup necessary, don't worry, it was safe to breathe, all of this. She knew it was a lie from the inside, and she was, again, writing memos, blowing the whistle, eventually writing to FBI Director Robert Mueller to try to get a criminal investigation launched at the people who were doing this cover-up, writing to Senator Hillary Clinton and all of this. And, of course, once again, they retaliate by trying to get her fired. It went through another years-long ordeal back and forth in the courts. It wasn't until last year, fully 17 years after 9/11, just last year, finally, the Department of Labor upheld their 2015 decision that she was, they did attempt to fire her for her whistleblowing, and they had to put her back in her position. So just going through this years-long nightmare to blow the whistle on what we now know has killed many, many hundreds, if not thousands of people since the events of 9/11. And it's something that, again, regardless of whatever you think about 9/11, everyone cares about that issue or should care about that issue. And yet, have you ever heard the name Kate Jenkins? She did get mentioned in the mainstream media a couple of times around the fifth anniversary of 9/11, but since then it's basically been crickets.
And it's just so disturbing. Every year on the anniversary, all these honorings and that they blast on mainstream media and everything else just goes ignored. It is fascinating. You have all these people and you would think that there'd be at least, I don't know, 10% of them that would want to make sure that at least mainstream somewhere, somehow, would pay a little more attention to the story. And it just goes to show just how big and how deep and corrupt this world really is. And
well, at the very least, I hope this series does help spread this information to more people. And if people do agree with that task, yes, and that agenda, then I hope they'll help spread that. It's at corporatereport.com/911whistleblowers. And the entire documentary is up there for free, video, audio, transcript, all of it. And I hope people will spread that information.
There you go, listeners. You know what to do. Get your family members to get there, too. And so we're going to move on to something Catherine Austin Fitz. It was your most recent Corbett Report podcast. And she's been following a lot of important stories over the years, the government's so-called black budget, the millions of, or I should say the trillions of missing dollars of federal government dollars. What did you think was the most interesting part of your interview of Catherine that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Well, I suppose if there's a news-ish angle to this conversation, it would be FASB 56, which was passed in October of 2018 by the Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board. It's a statement, an accounting statement, essentially, that applies to all federal government agencies and departments at this point, or at least a good number of them. And essentially, it is the black and white legalization of not just black budgets and classified money. That, of course, has existed at least since the creation of the national security state in 1947. But literally, the secretization of the entire process of that, even how this information is being classified, under what pretense, for what purpose, and by whom, is itself made secret. It's really quite a stunning thing that happened. But it, in fact, it actually passed just as the whole Kavanaugh brouhaha was kicking off and all of that last year, and got completely, utterly unnoticed, basically by anyone except Solari.com, Catherine Austin Fitz, and she's been working, for example, with Dr. Mark Skidmore. I can't remember which university he's associated with, but I did talk to him last December about this FASB 56 and about the missing trillions, specifically from the Pentagon. People may have heard about this, but essentially there are now, if you add up the numbers from the various different books over the years, which Solari and Catherine and Dr. Mark Skidmore did do, it is over $21 trillion now in unaccounted for transactions that the Pentagon has made over the past two decades, which is a remarkable, I mean, unfathomable figure. But the craziest part about it is that the official whitewash of that is to say, oh no, this isn't actual physical missing money. This is just plugs in the books because they can't make the books balance because they have all these different systems. So don't worry, it's much less than that. But as Mark and Catherine point out, actually it could be much, much, much more than that. It could be hundreds of trillions. I mean, maybe not that much, but it may be that much. We really don't know. The books are totally meaningless at this point. And I think that's really the point that needs to be underlined, because as Catherine points out in her reports, this is the basis of the U.S., the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, which underpins not just the Treasury notes and bonds, but also everything that's related to that, all the different securities and things down the line that are ultimately related back to the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, is completely undermined by this, in their own words, in black and white. Which cannot be stressed enough. This is the absolute core of the base of everything that is wrong with the system and the, you know, back door to wherever, with however many trillions of dollars being pumped out into whatever, which is what we're going to get into in the second part of the conversation coming up next month. But at any rate, this is the problem, and it seems like everything else is just kind of dancing around these questions.
Well, for a long time, we knew governments, state governments, you know, state governments had separate books. So this follows along the same lines. They're just, government has a separate accounting book. They basically made it legal now, right?
One of the interesting things about this statement 56 is that it isn't just a separate set of books that's classified, that certain this congressman and this senator can look at these books at this time kind of thing. It's not even like that. It is saying that these different bodies, these different departments and agencies, can literally put in their books that line items and other things that are made up in order to cover anything deemed to be national security. Specifically, from the FASAB 56 statement, the financial report of the U.S. government, bracket, government-wide financial report, end bracket, must include the following in the government-wide summary of significant accounting policies. accounting standards allow certain presentations and disclosures to be modified, if needed, to prevent the disclosure of classified information. Accordingly, modifications may have been made to certain presentations and disclosures, i.e., you cannot trust these books. We are telling you that they do not reflect reality. Like, the actual things they are reporting are untrue, which is, I think, a step beyond just having a separate, you know, classified set of books that can be looked at certain times by certain people. No, they're literally saying, we are lying to you. These books are not true, or at least we are not certifying them as true, which is just, that's a whole other level of in-your-facedness with us.
What other countries are doing this? I mean, it's got to be the whole world.
I would say every country, but yeah. Which country is putting it in black and white in law? I mean, that's the crazy part of this, that they are absolutely putting it out on public display now. And as Catherine Austin Fitz points out, there are all sorts of people, retail investors, institutional investors, money managers of all sorts, who are investing in these various things that are dependent on these treasuries and bonds and the government books in one way or another having some financial solidity to them. They have a fiduciary duty to their investors and people in the pension funds and what have you to actually know what it is they're investing in and to be sure about that. And they are absolutely abrogating that duty by going along with something like this, where the government is saying, we are lying to you with these books. What are you going to do about it? And the answer so far has been nothing.
But they knew that even with the LIBOR rate. To me, that was the biggest fraud ever. I mean, you have governments around the world. I mean, look what is all tied to the LIBOR rate. Everybody knew they were manipulating it. Even Tammy Geithner. Oh, yeah, I knew. You would think all those contracts would be voided because it was all rigged, and it doesn't matter.
It's unfathomable that the system continues the way it's continuing, but there are a lot of people whose lives and livelihoods depend on it continuing, and that's
as long as everybody goes along with it, I guess it works to a degree, but you're right, so many people are going to be just hurt. We're out of time, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank you for joining us. Thank you, James, and don't forget to give us a call at 800-375-4188. We'll be back on Monday. Until then, have a great weekend. Be safe and God bless.